Welcome to Other Plans on KDNK. Tracy, thanks for being here today. You grew up in Alaska, went to high school there, and have bounced around quite a bit since then and throughout your life. You've lived in Boston, Hawaii, and now here in Glenwood Springs. Would you mind telling us how you moved from one place to the next?
So growing up in Alaska, you get used to traveling a lot if you want to go from one town to another. It's quite a few hours of driving to get anywhere. And after high school, I was pretty excited to leave Alaska and go exploring. So we had Boston in there, San Francisco, Lake Tahoe, Hawaii, back to California, up to Alaska, now Colorado. And it just, now as being a helicopter pilot, that really facilitates moving. You go wherever the jobs are, basically.
And while you were in Alaska, your father worked for a gold mine there, and you did in high school. Is that right?
Yeah, Fort Knox Gold Mine, when it started up there, is why we moved to Alaska when I was younger.
And what did your father do there, and then what did you do?
So my father was one of the managers. He was the head of the environmental department up there for the mine. And then I got to be a summer hire for 3 years, and they put me in all the jobs other people probably didn't want with all the other summer hire kids. And I got to work in the lab and the mill and the geology side of it. I had a lot of fun, and I learned a lot.
How did you land in Hawaii from Alaska?
It ended up being, well, I hit San Francisco and Tahoe. I was living in Tahoe. I was 22, I think. And living in Tahoe is really exciting at a young age. But that spring and the fall, you're kind of starving because there's no tourism. So the restaurants are more mellow. And at some point, I was like, I need to get a job that actually, you know, does something more for people, that fills my heart with something. And so I ended up finding a great massage school over in Hawaii, and that's what took me over to Hawaii.
From massage to flying a helicopter, how did that happen then?
Well, I did massage school, and while I was going through massage school, I was hired by this crazy guy that was a house painter, and he taught me how to paint houses and paint all kinds of things. So I actually had a house painting business over in Hawaii for about 8 years while I lived there in that 10-year period. And in the house painting time is when I ended up, one of my best friends also from Lake Tahoe was living in Hawaii with me at that time. And she called me over one night. She's like, there's a barbecue. You got to come down here. There's a helicopter pilot. You got to hear what he has to say. And so we went down there and talked to him, and we were hooked by that evening. And then the next morning, I think we went for an intro flight with the helicopters at the school in Hawaii the next day, or maybe the day after that. So we were hooked right off the get-go.
Wow, that sounds like it happened pretty fast. Do you recall anything in particular that hooked you from that conversation?
I think since it was not necessarily that conversation, but my best friend, Lee, one of my best friends, Lee, that was there, we were young and we wanted to travel. And we decided that evening we want to be helicopter babes and travel all over the place and learn Spanish. And we both did our training. She did it a little bit before me. And then we both ended up in Alaska. So the traveling was still there, but, you know, ended up being a little bit more straightforward up to Alaska to go up there and work.
And I'll come back to what you did in Alaska in a little bit. But back to being a masseuse and going to massage school and also being a helicopter pilot. It seems to me that going to massage school and then being a medevac pilot require very different emotional skill sets. I might be wrong, but as a massage therapist, you are able to open up and connect with your client or whoever you're working on. And then as a medevac pilot, you would have to be able to control your emotions and remain really calm under a chaotic situation. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd say that's all fair. I think you need that opening up as a massage therapist too. And granted, that was quite a while ago. Like you need to create boundaries for yourself doing that occupation as well. Otherwise, you'll get burnt out and you don't want to take other people's stuff on. But that translates over to the cockpit. When you're in the cockpit, you are super focused just on what you're doing. So whatever's happening in the back is the responsibility of the med crew back there working on the patient. As a pilot, your responsibility is to fly the aircraft in the safest, most efficient way that you can. can.
Just in thinking about your background before you became a medevac pilot, it seems like you've met all sorts of walks of life and worked in many different places and different careers. And that, to me, would seem like it lends itself to being able to connect and communicate with many people, and especially in a medical environment and a stressful environment such as flying for medevac. And I just wonder, what in your upbringing do you think prepared you to be in the position you're in as a medevac pilot?
I don't know. That's a good question. Medevac pilots, you know, we're all different. Everybody's always so different. Some people, when they're flying, and maybe this is the most appropriate thing, you know, they're kind of flying. You have no emotional attachment to the patient you're flying, and that is so that you can focus on your job. And I think I still have quite a bit of empathy, and I don't necessarily have emotional attachments to the patients that we fly, but just like any normal human, you're like, come on, man, we're going to get you there as fast as we can. You know, you're in good hands, and you're just, you know, trying to be as empathetic. It's not that hard to put yourself or your loved ones in the shoes of that patient and how you would want to be treated.
What was it like to learn how to fly a helicopter?
I was terrible in the beginning. We're all terrible for the first 6 hours. It's like learning how to ride a unicycle and juggle at the same time. And until something just finally clicks in, it's a real struggle. But then it clicks in and you're kind of hanging on by the seat of your pants for the first 100 hours or so. And then you just accumulate that time and that experience and the confidence as you kind of go through it. But we're all kind of a hot mess when we start.
So you're a rotor wing pilot?
I am a rotor wing pilot, yeah. Only rotor wing.
Okay. What certifications do you need in order to be fully licensed?
So there's different certifications. So you start with your private pilot's license, your commercial, your instrument, your flight instructor, and then your instrument flight instructor. And when that's all said and done, you should have around 200 hours worth of training in. And then at that point, nobody will hire you because you're a dangerous pilot, except for the school that trained you, basically. And you work that 200 hours to the 1,000-hour mark, which we call the magic 1,000, instructing and learning with your students that you're working with, basically, that whole 800 hours. And then you finally get your first real job where you're like, you'll go anywhere for that job at 1,000 hours because you're just still singing for your supper. And then that kind of gets you in the door of commercial work, either tour somewhere in the canyon or Alaska or somewhere. And then when you get to medevac, usually they need a minimum of 3,000 hours, if not, you know, at least 2,500 hours. And that means you got quite a few years behind you at that point.
So right now you work for Classic Air Medical?
Yeah, Classic Air Medical.
And I recently read in the newspaper, there was an article back in August, I think, that the company has been working with Valley View now for 5 years. And how long have you been with them?
We've been with Classic for the last 2 years as of last August, so just a little over 2 years.
Okay. And before becoming a medevac pilot, you had said that after Hawaii, you did go back to Alaska and you gave heli tours there. Is that right?
Yeah. So my husband and I both worked up in Alaska in Juneau, and we started with the tours up on the Mendenhall Glacier. And we were up there for 5 and 6 years. I was up there for 6 and he was up there for 5. And the longer you're there, and as you become a full-time person, not just a seasonal, you take on more responsibility like contract work or heli ski work in the winter, other things. The tours become the fun part and you're doing a lot of other things for work.
And so you said that your husband is also a pilot. Do you work together here in Glenwood?
We do. And this is a dream job. It's a unicorn job. We came down from Alaska because we have a kiddo, and when you're working in Alaska, you're gone all the time as a helicopter pilot because everybody's out doing the jobs in the summertime. So we weren't around our kid very much. We didn't see each other very much. The last summer we were up there, he was gone for 5 months, I think. So we didn't see each other at all that whole time. And so now down here in Colorado, We live about 20 seconds from the hospital, and one will do days, one will do nights, and then we'll get our time off together. And it's just amazing as a couple, because that's not very common.
So I just have a couple questions about the crew of a medevac helicopter. What is a typical mm-hmm. medevac crew made up of? How many people, and what are their roles?
So we always have a flight nurse, and we always have a flight paramedic. And then we have one pilot, and that's our crew. And they're just my heroes. They are trained so well to have the autonomy in the helicopter to make these decisions that they need to make en route. And it's amazing that we can go and pick up a patient in the middle of nowhere, and they can figure out what hospital is going to be best suited for the patient and their issues. And I just feel like I'm coattailing on their awesomeness because I get to be part of that team.
How many calls does an on-call crew from Valley View get on an average day?
It really depends on what time of year it is, what time of week it is, if the moon is full. You know, it really depends on how many people are out and about being active. So in the summer, we end up being really busy in the summer because people are active and accidents happen all the time. Hunting season is a big time for us because people are out hunting and maybe not used to the elevation up here coming from lower lands. And we're always there. Yeah, it just really depends on, like, what time of year it is, basically.
And when you say there are hunting accidents and the altitude, are you talking about altitude sickness or actual puncture wounds?
Altitude sickness. So a lot of people will come up here from Texas or Minnesota, somewhere a little bit flatter, come up to the flat tops and be hiking around at 10 or 11,000 feet, and their bodies just aren't used to it. And so we get a lot of altitude sickness, a lot of people getting lost that we try to find. If you're out in the wilderness and you're hunting and, you know, you break your leg, you're not hiking out. So getting help and getting a helicopter as close to you as possible is pretty important in a timely manner, too.
And I heard you say it depends on if it's a full moon. Can you tell me more about what you mean?
It's almost a joke, but it just seems like sometimes the more light out, the more shenanigans are happening. So I just feel like I'm waiting at the helipad for us to load a patient when there's more light out in the sky. Say anything definitive about that by any means. It just, if people have the opportunity to be out and about playing, then more accidents are happening, it seems like. When I was growing up in Alaska, one of my childhood friends, his father was a doctor, and he would always tell us more things happen on the full moons because people are outside screwing around and getting hurt. And I always thought that was interesting as a kid.
Yeah.
But I couldn't say that transfers over to medevac. I think we're busy regardless.
Are there certain holidays where you're more active?
The whole season. And it seems like right after Christmas, we get a whole bunch of people that have been putting off ailments, like, when did you start feeling this way? And they're like, oh, a couple days ago, but I didn't want to ruin the Christmas for everybody. I'm like, oh. And I don't know enough about medical stuff, but I know that, you know, if they would have come in a day or two earlier, it would have been a lot better for them.
Wow. Well, yeah. So
holidays really stress people out.
Explain the area that you cover. What is the radius that you're flying?
We fly all over the place, and we're in Utah. We can go up to Wyoming. We haven't had to go down to New Mexico yet. We've been in Arizona, and we have bases all over the place. So as a company, too, we're always backing each other up. We have a base in Steamboat. We have a base in Moab that's close. So if that helicopter is out, we can slip in, or vice versa. If we're out on a call, they can slip in over here relatively easily. And our helicopter is a little bigger. It's got the twin engine, so we fly a little bit faster, and so we can get places a little faster and have a little bit more distance in a timely manner, if you will. So we fly all over. So most of our stuff is going to be Denver or Grand Junction, but we've been going down to Pagosa a lot. We're up in Steamboat a lot. We're up in Craig a lot. But it'll be all over from anything on the Front Range, the hospitals on the Front Range. We go to all of those.
What type of a hospital is Valley View, and why are there medevac helicopters here but not in other hospitals?
That really is definitive. I can't speak for Valley View, and understanding that I've only been doing this 2 years, so I'm still getting my head wrapped around some of the dynamics and politics of medevac. But the hospital will choose to make a contract with the helicopter company. In this case, they've chosen to make a contract with Classic Air Medical. And Valley View, to my understanding, is a trauma 3 hospital, where like St. Mary's is a trauma 2 and Colorado University in Denver is a trauma 1. And Valley View is an amazing hospital, especially for the area that it services around here. So anything that happens where maybe somebody, you know, has neural damage or needs to go to a different hospital or bigger hospital, or, you know, high-risk OB patients, a lot of those will end up going to Denver to specific hospitals that service that specific need. Valley View is able to kind of delegate that out to where people, you know, will get the best care that they can for the issue that they've got.
Just in talking about our valley and our area, it seems to me that air ambulances have become really important in creating access to healthcare in rural areas. And sometimes I don't feel like we are in a rural area, but then other times I do really feel that. I think that you as a medevac pilot are literally providing a lifeline, especially in the winter here when Independence Pass is closed. And now with the I-70 closures, it feels really necessary to have medevac here.
So I love this job. The part that we play, it's amazing. It's just the access that we can help people get up into the mountains, that people that are in accidents up there, hunting accidents or ATVs or snow machines, where otherwise it would take a long time to get people hiked out on sleds somehow. It's a really cool way to connect everybody. These people, we have such a recreational state that a lot of our search and rescue stuff is going to be hikers up on mountains that, you know, on their descent, they either hurt their knee and can't make the rest of the way down. It just provides such a great network.
Just speaking of everything that goes on and the different rescues that you're on, I'm wondering if you can describe a rescue that you've done here in the Roaring Fork Valley. So from start to finish, how are you summoned and who calls you and how do you know where to go? Could you talk a little bit about one of those in particular incidences?
Yeah. And I'll probably take it up a little bit more. We get a lot of stuff up in the flat tops. But understand, my scope is just as a pilot. And there's a lot of people working to make all this happen. I'm just the one that will accept the flight and take the flight. So how it would start is, say, you and your sister are out hiking in the flat top and somebody trips and breaks their leg or twists their ankle enough to where you can't walk anymore. In that case, then either with a sat phone or somehow if you can get cell signal, you would call your local 911 and that initiates the whole process of search and rescue. They get as much information from you as they can, and then they deem who is the most appropriate emergency services to come and help you. Is it an ambulance? Are you on a road somewhere that they can get to pretty easy, or is it more of a threatening issue where a helicopter needs to be launched? And so in that case, they find the closest provider. In this case, it would be Classic. They call the main comm center and give them the detailed information. Our communication center located in Salt Lake will then communicate to whichever pilot and team is closest to the incident and available, and then send out a page and ask for a weather check and if the pilot can accept the flight or not, and go from there. And so say we do accept the flight, we get the coordinates and as much information as we can to either go directly to the people or meet up with the emergency services of that county. The med crew will assess the damage or the patient's needs, basically, and then figure out what hospital to go to from there. Well, we do 2 hours of search and rescue for free. So once the authorities call and say, hey, we need help finding somebody, somebody is missing in the river, or somebody's missing in the flat tops, or we're looking for somebody that is missing off this trail, Classic will provide 2 hours of search and rescue for free. And whether we find that person or not, or just locate their coordinates, that's kind of the nice aspect of sharing with the community, you know, our way of helping people out in the community. And they do that at every base. And I just think it's an amazing thing.
Does any flight that you've taken come to mind in your time as a medevac pilot that just sticks out to you more than others?
I don't know if I can talk about any of my personal flights, honestly, because of the patient privacy.
Okay. Have you been called to some of the 14ers that you often read about in the newspaper? Would a medevac pilot, would a medevac classic air be called for something like that, or is that a hike-in?
Yeah. No, we do get called for that. And so we had a, I guess I could be kind of vague on this, we had a Hunter up in Steamboat, and we were able to get up there. And sometimes people don't know where they are when they're hurt. They just kind of have a general idea, so they can't give exact coordinates or anything like that. And that's where it really takes the emergency services of that county, their own ground search and rescue, and the tools that they have to get up to patients, whether it's ATVs or four-wheelers, and just trying to, like, get a better pinpoint on the patient's condition and the patient's exact location. Because sometimes with the helicopters, we can't get right next to the patient. There might still be a walk of a mile or a hike in the woods or something like that. So it takes this whole network of people to try to make it all work and get to the patient safely and to get the patient extracted.
Do you ever, after you've been on a call, does your flight crew and the crew that you're with ever hear back from those who have ridden in your helicopter?
Yes, and it's the best feeling in the world. And we also try to do a lot of follow-up. So when we take patients, specific ones, especially if we're spending a lot of time like helping look for them, or just a lot invested instead of just kind of an A to B flight, or even sometimes those, there's a lot of interest in like the patient's well-being afterwards. Hey, do we know what happened with this person? And the follow-up with the hospitals is really cool. And it's amazing to see, even around town, people come up to me and be like, hey, you flew my father, or you flew my kid, or a kid comes up and says thank you. Especially in a small community like this, there is, I feel like it's pretty good feedback.
Yeah, I bet. I'd imagine. And that must make you feel like you're doing a job that is helping people.
Yeah, and it's my neighbors. This is my community. So I'm helping, you know, mostly this valley area, but it's all over the state too. It's an awesome job.
Have you worked on fires as well?
Yeah, I got the opportunity to work on fires when I was up in Alaska. So that's called contract work. And it's actually a lot of fun, and it's very challenging, and it's a really cool flight environment to be in.
When I'm thinking of wildfires and witnessing some wildfires in this area, I imagine that the incredible heat and updrafts must make it for a wild ride and incredible turbulence. What's that like to manage?
Well, it's something. You have to be smart and cautious when you're around fires. And the smoke is probably one of the biggest things. The visibility is really going to go south on you for being around fires, depending on what way the wind's blowing or if any wind is blowing. But when I was working in Alaska on fires, it was in an A-star. And so we're not the big ones we're not the Black Hawks and the massive helicopters that are dumping the big buckets. We're kind of more on the outskirts of it. So that, I like that feeling of it. Or flying one of the managers around to kind of assess what the fire's doing on a day-to-day basis.
And I've watched medevac helicopters land at hospitals such as Valley View, and it seems to me that it really takes a delicacy for those helicopters and landing those. With wildfires, it looks to me, by contrast, like fighting fires doesn't seem to be as delicate at all. What do you prefer, medevac or flying for wildfires?
I don't know that I can answer that question. The flying in Alaska was pretty wild, and it was a lot of fun, and you get to see a lot of cool stuff. As far as job-wise, I love what I do here. I really enjoy the medevac. It's more of a personal job. I love the crew that I'm working with. I feel like we're really helping instead of, sometimes when you're doing fire, you're just kind of a cog in the wheel. Here, you know, we're playing a pretty big part for the community, and I really enjoy that. So I'd say that I like the medevac better. The fires are exciting, though, and heli-ski is exciting. But medevac, and the state is exciting. Flying over the state and going to get people that are out hiking and hunting, like, there's challenges around every corner here. So the flying's not boring by any means here.
So you're saying that you like the challenge.
Oh yeah, we love the challenge.
You were the first female rotor wing pilot hired by Classic Air Medical. When was that, and how is it being a woman in the business?
Being a woman in the business is awesome, and we're getting more and more women in the business. They hired me in 2019, and now Classic has a handful of amazing ladies flying. It's just, I couldn't be more proud, because we're starting to find our foothold in the industry a little bit more and more, and that means that we're helping, just like the women before us, kind of pave the way for more people, more ladies to come into it.
Exactly. I feel like we've talked about empathy and being empathetic, and perhaps your previous careers have led to that and being around all sorts of people, but and you're a mother as well. And I think there's something to be said for being in the business you're in and being a woman. So thank you.
Yeah, it's definitely fun. Got to talk to more kids.
Do you ever go into schools and talk about your career?
We do so much cool stuff. So we have this amazing PR guy here, Reed Clausen, and he sets up so much community stuff, and a huge percentage of that is with kids. And anything that we can get out there, because the main thing we don't want is, we don't ever want a kid or a person to be fearful when they're getting in the helicopter and they're going for a flight to a hospital. They've probably got enough to worry about. So the more understanding and knowledge they have about what we do and what a part we play, we just want people to be more and more comfortable with that and just have a thorough understanding of what we're doing. So they're not intimidated. They're not scared. Helicopters aren't this, you know, elusive thing. They're cool. They're here. You could be on one.
And just talking about your career, and your husband is also a pilot, and you talked about the schedule and how this particular schedule really works for you guys. What is a typical medevac pilot schedule?
So the way we have it set up, and this is just for Classic, as far as I know here, it's 7 days on, 7 days off. So Tuesday through Tuesday is going to be your schedule. And some bases where pilots have to drive a lot further and commute, they have it set up for 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off. So you get a nice balanced schedule either way. But one person will work days, so 7 in the morning till 7 in the evening, and the next person will work nights, 7 in the evening till 7 in the morning. So it's a good balance for the two.
Just back to a typical call or how a call works. You as the pilot, I'm wondering if you, when you get the call in and you assess the weather and the conditions, are you a part of the decision making in the go or no go if you're gonna fly, and how does that work?
Everybody's a part of the decision making in the go or no go. Say two to say go and one to say no. So if one person doesn't feel comfortable because of weather conditions, or perhaps other facilities have turned the flight down for weather issues, which ends up happening, then we all communicate together, because we all want to be on board with each other and supportive of each other. So most of the time, though, the crew understands what the pilot's capable of, and if a pilot feels comfortable with the flight, then the weather is definitely good enough to be able to do that flight. So they kind of defer to the pilot as far as that. But it is a crew communication, especially as the winter sets in and more snowstorms are moving through. Like, we all discuss it, and it's very easy to be like, hey, I don't feel comfortable with that. And sometimes the nice thing is that you have the backup of, if we don't feel comfortable getting over the mountains with the helicopter, we can always call the fixed wing plane and have them come pick up the patient. They have broader weather minimums than we do. And then if all else fails, we've always got the ground ambulances. So nothing is ever, you know, resting totally on my shoulders for, we have to get this patient out because it's just not worth the safety of the crew and the patient.
Can you give an example of a weather event that would cause you to say that you wouldn't be able to make a flight?
Yeah, well, Denver lately with all the snowstorms, so by Berthoud Pass, that ends up becoming a blanket of clouds, and I can't get to Denver if that whole pass is covered in clouds, that whole Front Range area. We don't fly over clouds. So that's just part of our rules of what we operate by. And so, yeah, if there's a big storm, we'll go around. We can go around a lot of stuff, thunderstorms, snowstorms, if they're not like a big frontline squall. There's a lot that we can go around, but if the ceilings are low and the visibility is low, we just don't even mess with it.
I'm thinking about everything that you've done in the time that you've been a helicopter pilot and a medevac pilot, landing in probably in the middle of mountainous terrain, highways, and maybe even car crashes. And it makes me think that you've probably seen a lot just being a pilot. And I wondered, how do you take care of yourself and avoid burnout?
That's a really good question. I think that with the crew, there's very good boundaries and a very good support system. And the crew, like, they have experienced way more than I have because they've all been doing this for years and years and years. So these nurses and these medics, we've got a flight nurse that's been flying for almost 20 years. And she, to me, she's like a saint. But if you ever have a problem processing, like what you've seen or what you're going to, talking to them, that's the biggest thing because they're so supportive. And I don't know, they really help you kind of, I don't know, process through that information, which is good because I can't hold a candle to the stuff that they've seen. I know if I've got something bad, they've got something 10 times worse.
How many flight hours have you logged?
I've got over 3,000 now.
And how many sorts of different types of helicopters have you flown in?
So we all start with Robinsons for the most part. They're like the small, cheap trainer helicopters, and I don't think I'd want to get back in one anymore. And then I flew A-Stars in Alaska, and that's a wonderful ship. And then flying for Classic, we have Bell 407s mainly for our fleet, and I love that helicopter. It is such a fun helicopter to fly. And then we've got a really amazing helicopter here. The only one in our fleet is the Bell 429, and that's a twin engine. And especially up altitude and the patients that we're serving in this area, I love that helicopter. It's like flying a big, sexy, I don't know, small short bus, just a great helicopter for patient care and for the altitude and the environment that we fly in up here.
You said earlier that the type of call that you would get or fly to really depends on the time of year. And we're in fall, and I know hunting season is going on, and then ski season will start and backcountry activities. I just wonder if you have any advice for listeners, or if there's one piece of equipment you would suggest they carry when they're recreating.
Yes. Yes, I do. And thank you for asking. This is going to be my next email out to everybody. The main thing is it's the easiest for us to find you if you're carrying a Garmin InReach or a Spot, some sort of GPS tracker that you can send a signal, an SOS signal, or almost everybody should have those at this point. They're not very expensive. The subscriptions aren't very expensive. You can buy them on Amazon. But if you're out hiking, hunting, riding your motorcycle, and other people don't know exactly where you are, you send a signal out, and we are within like 3 feet of where your location is. We're not looking in an area. We go looking for a spot. And that is the easiest way because we spend hours and hours looking for people in camouflage in the forest, and it's very challenging. But if you have an InReach or one of those GPS things, it brings us right to you. It makes it a lot easier for us. And it gets, if somebody's leg is broken or if they're hurt or had a heart attack, which is a huge thing this time of year, especially for some of the gentlemen hunting, heart attacks and strokes with the hunters is a big thing. It just gets people to you quick.
What happens if you lose power in a helicopter?
So if you lose power in a helicopter and your engine dies, we glide down like a beautiful little bird and we flare at the bottom in a nice open spot or a small open spot and are able to land it. And I love fixed wing planes, but the ability to land in a very confined area with a helicopter is definitely one of the perks on this thing.
Oh, okay. So you do have a pretty surefire way to land a helicopter if the engine dies.
Yeah, exactly. And they're called auto rotations, and every pilot that's gotten to this point has done thousands of auto rotations to get that nailed in. But the nice thing, too, especially about this helicopter, is we have two engines. So if one engine fails on our helicopter, we're still flying.
What would you say is the hardest, most challenging part of your job?
Well, there's a fun, challenging aspect, and that's when we're out on scene calls or search and rescues, trying to find somebody and trying to get as close as we can to them and find a proper landing area. That's a fun challenge, not usually too frustrating. I don't know what the hardest part would be. I guess if you're trying to get in somewhere and the wind is not cooperating with you and you're not able to land in a spot that you usually would be able to land in, that could be very frustrating.
And just emotionally, it, like you said earlier, that you're able to cut your emotions off pretty quickly. I wonder how you've learned how to take yourself out of it.
It's kind of like when you get in the car. You know, you've got your muscle memory on how to drive and when to shift and when to use your blinker and apply the brakes. So there's part of your brain that's running that operation behind. And you driving a car, now you're looking outside. Becoming a good driver is all about looking outside and becoming a defensive driver and, you know, staying on top of that. So as a helicopter pilot, you're doing the same thing. You get in your seat. You have your muscle memory of how you fly the helicopter, but most of your job is going to be looking outside and looking at your instruments and interpreting all that to make it so that you have a safe flight. So your brain is fully engaged. There's not a lot of space in there to be worrying about the patient in the back. Like that's in the crew's capable hands. So it's like you're almost so busy and consumed with what your responsibility is that that kind of kicks out of your brain. And then you could think about it when you help upload the patient. You're like, ooh, this is challenging. This poor person, I'm glad we got him here.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. And what is the best thing about your job? What's your favorite part of your job?
So I love working with the crew. I love my crew here in Glenwood, and I love the other crews at the other bases. They just make this such a cool job. The community is one of my favorite things. I love being part of this community and helping in a way that I'm able to help. And flying all over the state, I love flying. In this state, my eyes can't soak enough of these mountains in, and it seems like every other flight, I'm discovering something new that I feel like I've flown over 100 times, but for some reason never saw that waterfall. So it's like a new adventure every time we fly.
And what's next for you? What do you think would be the next thing for you?
This is it. I love this. Like we feel so blessed, my husband and I do, finding Glenwood. We didn't even know about Glenwood until I started talking with Classic, and they had me go around and check out a couple bases. And we have just fallen in love with this town, with the state, with flying. We really like working with Valley View. The doctors and nurses and the people that help there are just such an amazing team. It's cool to be part of that. And I don't know that there is anything next. There's more camping is what's next for us.
Good.
And vacations, yeah.
Well, good. Well, Tracy, thank you so much for joining me. I'll be looking up at the sky for you.
Thank you very much, Abby. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about something that's such a cool part of our community.